One key to increasing the representation of women in physics is to make sure that girls and young women are adequately prepared when they choose science as a topic of study, and that the interest that they may have in physics is nurtured and encouraged from a very young age. Indeed, in the ideal situation, all capable and interested students would find physics a challenging and interesting and welcoming discipline. However, from the underrepresentation of women in physics, we gather that this is not the case. So early participation of girls and young women is predicated on sparking their interest in science. So in the past decade, the Canadian society had witnessed an upward trend in the number of short-term and year-long activities that can increase the interest and involvement of girls in science and in physics in particular. And these efforts are targeting girls from a very young age, starting in elementary school. Carefully planned curriculum or extracurricular activities, which are rich in examples and hands-on demonstrations, they can spark the girls' interest in physics, in science, and in how the things around us work. Canadian academic institutions and non-profit organizations are making a lot of effort to generate interest in science, as I said, from a very young age. And some programs run year-round, others are structured as girls-only summer camps. What is common to all these activities is that they try to design a variety of opportunities for the attendees to help them see, for instance, the connection between sciences and everyday life, to help them gain confidence in their science achievement, and to encourage their enrollment in future science courses. The Canadian Association for Girls in Science is a good example of an organization that through a variety of fun activities, such as the physics of music and chemistry of cooking, is trying to promote, educate, and support the interest and confidence in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics for girls. The Techploration program from Nova Scotia and the BC programs Miss Infinity and Quantum Leaps are also examples of mentoring and networking programs that stimulate the interest in science in young women. Most universities have outreach activities. Just to mention, for example, University of New Brunswick is organizing regular workshops for teachers on topics that are often suggested by the teachers themselves. The teenage girls that are in the Techploration program in Nova Scotia are paired with mentors that fit their interests and that are adequate for the age of the girls. And through this program, girls have the opportunity to learn about career opportunities in about 150 professions. Girls from the same age group are targeted by Operation Minerva, which is a one-day job shadowing program that runs across the country. In this process, girls visit university, attend lectures, they attend lab demonstrations, they do hands-on activities with their mentors for the day. The Perimeter Institute, as we mentioned yesterday, has a number of outreach activities that promote the power and fun of physics to students and the public. Just to mention a few are the very popular public lectures, the Teachers for Workshops called Einstein Plus, and an international summer school for young physicists. Another way in which universities participate in outreach activities is by their support of science fairs and physics olympiads. For example, as far as science fairs go, I just have some statistics from our province in Alberta, where over 60% of the participants are girls, and in BC it seems that over 52% are girls. This is a high participation rate from a fairly young age. Also to mention are the physics olympiads that run in several Canadian provinces, and for example, in British Columbia, about 600 students participate every year in these physics competitions. So we can say that girls are interested in science, and really it's up to us to design activities that generate and maintain their interest in physics and in science in general. Scientists make also visits to school in their district, and through clear language they communicate their love and enjoyment of physics to students and to educators. The teachers are also invited to visit the academic physics units to meet and interact with faculty members, and even more, to jointly develop outreach activities. In addition, teachers get ideas for new physics-related curriculum activities that they can use to enrich their curriculum. And in many cases, they obtain, they get some help in form of kits for some demos or individual pieces of equipment donated by the universities that they visit. Another good example is a program called Innovators in the Schools, available in British Columbia, and for students that are from kindergarten to grade 12. It's a program that aims to address the province's needs for more scientists, engineers, and technologists by trying to encourage and promote the students' interest in this area through hands-on demonstrations and very lively demonstrations, presentations by real scientists in their schools. A recent survey of Canadian teens between age 16 and 18 has showed that only a third of them are interested in taking science, a science course at post-secondary level, regardless of all the known opportunities that are for them in a science and technology-based career. The reason for this could be that teens in Canada, they don't think of science as being cool. And this survey underscores the importance of making science fun, relevant, and accessible to so that teens continue to stay in science in high school and consider pursuing it at the post-secondary level. Another program I want to mention to you is the Let's Talk Science program, which is a national program, an award-winning charitable organization that delivers science learning programs to children and teenagers. In these settings, groups of faculty members, undergraduate and graduate students, are taking their passion for science to local and regional classrooms as part of this program that brings scientific concepts to research to young people in a fun and engaging way. Young people are not often exposed to the more practical aspects of our field and rarely to the caring parts of our profession. And girls have been shown to respond positively to fields that are relevant or provide the opportunity to work with people. So as recruiters, we need to emphasize those aspects of our discipline and emphasize them through our examples and demonstrations. Now I'd like to talk to you about the topic of living and entering a career in physics. As we all know, for many women in physics, and in science in general, their responsibilities include family obligations, maternity, child care, occasionally care of older parents. And the childbearing age of a woman usually coincides with a peak activity in her career. And to facilitate a family life, many women choose to take a break in their career. There are still regions where the availability of daycare is a problem, and in those regions, this issue is quite important. Furthermore, many women are married to male members in the same field, and this leads them to a dual career path, where quite often the woman physicist is following the male scientist, and this may result again in a career break for her. For many women faculty members, the availability of daycare services in the location of a conference can make the difference between them attending or not attending that conference or workshop. And most conference organizers are aware of this problem, but it is still solved in a very ad hoc way. So to kind of continue with this section, I'd like to say that in Canada there are several measures taken to prevent career breaks, and in case of such a situation occurs, these programs are help facilitate the return to work of the physicist. So here are a couple of examples. For example, the paid parental leave benefits that are part of the Canadian unemployment insurance system. And what's most important is that they can be taken off by a parent and for both adopted and natural children. Another very good program, and I'm not sure if you are all aware of it, is parental leave for students and postdocs. Our main funding agency, NSERC, may assist in making available funds to a supervisor that has a graduate student or a postdoc going on maternity leave. And this can help eliminate career gaps, which I would think they are detrimental in finding later on a good position. What is the maternal wall? Well, very often, and I can speak for myself now also, highly educated Canadian women do not encounter gender discrimination until they encounter this maternal wall that hinders advancement in their professional careers. Professional mothers simply are unable to find the overtime hours that are both expected and required for advancement and success in their profession. So professional mothers can find themselves mummy-tracked, both financially and on the professional advancement scale with respect to their male counterparts. The pay gap between young or middle-aged mothers and women of the same age that have no children is now larger than the wage gap between men and women from the same age group. In Canadian academia, having women take the legal one-year parental leave is not common. Most universities support parental leave with full pay up to 5 months, and between which financial support is provided by unemployment insurance and the Government of Canada. Often such extended leaves result in delayed publications, delayed recruitment of graduate studies by faculty members, and for graduate students it can mean a total break from their career. At all levels in academia, career gaps tend to have a detrimental effect on securing a subsequent position or job. The Hildred Blewett Fellowship, available in the States, but it's also available to Canadian citizens, was established to enable women to return to physics research careers. Now, what can we do to ease up the process? One very useful tool is networking. Any networking efforts within an university or between members of academia and from different institutions are very useful. For instance, universities can, here I speak mostly from the experience at my university, universities organize workshops on technical writing, writing research grant proposals. Workshops on time management and on project management. And it is also possible that every university has a mentoring program in which more senior faculty members are mentoring the early career colleagues and helps them develop negotiation and team working skills, as well as helps them build up research collaborations, which are very, the research collaboration are actually very important and can ease up a lot the transition to workforce when you made a career break. Other programs available in Canada are the compassionate care leave. We hope we'll never need it, but it is available in case we have a family member that is gravely ill. Now, the on-campus childcare it is a mixed blessing. A lot of universities have it, but there are still universities in Canada that have no on-campus childcare. My university, until 2 years ago, didn't have a daycare. The daycare that exists, usually they don't meet the needs of the academic community, and this leads to very long lists and waiting lists that are hundreds of people long. Another program available to faculty members is called Pause the Tenure Clock. A lot of universities have internal policies by which they allow faculty members to extend the pre-tenure period by 1 year per pregnancy. That could be quite helpful. In recent years, we have noticed a steady increase in the enrollment of women in physics graduate programs in Canada, but we have not observed at the same rate an increase of number of women in the physics workforce. And a possible reason is that more than half of the married women physicists are married to physicists or other PhD scientists. And sometimes it may be difficult to find a job in the same geographical area, leading to a dual career problem. In this context, candidates of visa sex may reject or off a job offer, or they can leave a job if their spouse does not eventually obtain a satisfactory employment. Now I'd like to talk to you about how institutions across Canada are solving the dual career couples problem, or the two-body problem. We have two groups of institutions. We have academic institutions that have no university-wide policies for solving the dual career problem, and for these institutions they solve it in a case-by-case basis, and the success depends on the field of work of the partner and the availability of openings for term positions at that given university. And sometimes it may happen that promises that are made at the time of hiring for a second position go unfulfilled for many years, when we have what is referred to as a trailing spouse, a spouse that may end up underemployed and slowly dissatisfied. There is a program that existed between 1991 and 2009, the University Faculty Award program of ENSERC. And this program enabled a large number of universities to hire women. It was providing incentives to universities to offer positions to women or minority physicists. Unfortunately, this program had disappeared, and we hope that ENSERC will create another program that will foster and create incentives for universities to hire women. There is still the Chairs for Women in Science and Engineering program funded in 1996. It's a 5-year program, renewable ones, and this program still exists. I mentioned there's a second category of academic institution, namely those that have implemented a spousal hiring program. On such academic institutions, they can use what we call headhunters or some employment company to help the spouse find suitable employment. You have to be careful that sometimes you are hired and if you are in such a situation, you are offered a shared or a split position. Such positions are attractive only when you have young children, but over a number of years, they don't seem to make a lot of sense. So, what organizations can help in Canada? One support organization is the Canadian Association of Physicists, which together with the Canadian Association of University Teachers are actively working towards minimizing the socioeconomic and professional gaps between women and men. The Canadian Association of University Teachers works towards ensuring that women in academia at all professional levels are offered opportunities on par with their male colleagues. The Canadian Association of Physicists, on the other side, supports and serves as a catalyst, bringing together men and women to discuss and address issues concerning women in physics across Canada. Yesterday I mentioned, and I will talk to you again about the Committee to Encourage Women in Physics of the Canadian Association of Physicists. It's nothing new. It has been initiated in 1983. It's a committee that is made up of both women and men, and it's involved in many activities. I will just mention a few. It organizes panel discussions and a special session at the CAP Congress every year. It proposes female speakers for the CAP lecture tour. It produces a directory of women in physics in Canada and organizes delegations to attend the International Conference of Women in Physics. Through its activities, the Canadian Association of Physicists encourages university to revise their curriculum and programs and includes and have them include interdisciplinary or combined majors such as medical physics, biophysics, environmental physics, because it has been observed that this type of dual majors encourage the participation of women. In recent years, several Canadian physics departments have conducted an external review of the or assessment of the climate and environment for women in their physics departments. Following these assessments, often a significant progress has been made for a more friendly, more open, more invigorating and welcoming climate towards women colleagues. In large universities, some physics departments have made great efforts and now have 4 or more female faculty members. And across the country, they still are fewer every year institutions that have no female hired as a faculty member. So in the past decade, universities in Canada have made efforts to address what we call the chilly climate issue for women in science and create a friendly environment for its female faculty members. Notable are measures that are aimed at promoting gender studies across university faculties and departments and supporting women in coping with environmental stress factors. When needed, many universities have provided customized, flexible organizational practices that facilitate a balance between work and family life. Several measures that have been implemented include career advice, mentoring and training, provision of funds for professional development and training of faculty members that are in charge of hiring and promotions. As you may realize, compared with the beginning of the century, we have a lot of opportunities, and even if we feel quite frustrated about our life at times, we have to remember how far along we have come. So, as I mentioned, numerous Canadian universities are trying to develop tools aimed at challenging gender stereotypes in science. You have to realize that even so it's not obvious, these efforts exist. And I will spend some time talking to you about them just to convince you that there is goodwill on the part of the universities and they are aware of the gender gaps that exist out there and are working towards narrowing it. So there are two ways in which we can challenge gender stereotypes. One is by offering our university's community images, access to images and representations of women in science, especially through the collection of data documenting the groundlessness of stereotypes, the use of gender-sensitive language in textbooks, as well as an awareness-raising initiatives. And secondly, a particular attention is devoted to fighting the mechanisms that attach gender to disciplines, topics, or tasks. In addition, curriculums are revised to include relevant gender studies. Institutional and organizational arrangements are made to increase the number of women in research leadership positions. Supporting women's representation in leadership positions in science is a strategy that's promoted by many, if not all, universities. Many universities have developed tools at strengthening women's visibility and role in communication flow between scientists and the general public. And here I would like to give an example of a speaker series similar with what one of the students was organizing in Toronto and she told us yesterday about. This one, available at University of Lethbridge, has a mandate to highlight on the research and careers of women, both within the institution and beyond, in order to encourage and inspire our women's studies. And sadly, this speaker series has been started after a senior faculty member had made some very racist comments in a meeting of a general faculty council. But the image and representation of physics is strongly gendered as masculine, and the increasing participation of women does not automatically mean that this is going to change. A male view is also dominant about who the users and beneficiaries of science and technology are, and what impacts scientific and technological development have on people. We all can think of examples of women in former male-dominated fields. Here are just a few. Probably you recognize the faces of some of them. So what are the efforts to move towards a gender-aware science and physics? In Canada, lately, we have noticed some efforts to promote an analysis on gender and science research, which is aimed at providing an overview and analysis of the research projects carried out on this issue at national and regional level in the past decade. This is actually very significant because the final results of this effort will likely offer new insights into dimensions, risks, and features of male-dominated understandings of disciplines such as physics. And countering gender blindness in physics also represents a prerequisite for scientific and technological research in order to obtain excellence. By now, it is widely acknowledged that male gendered assumptions are at the very core of the scientific processes, influencing research priorities, theoretical contexts and methods, data interpretations, and educational approaches. Programs aimed at introducing awareness of the gender perspective in science and technology may represent an antidote to some of the more serious impediments contributing to the leaky pipe phenomenon that affects women in research. In particular, they may help women overcome barriers connected with a sense of not being adequately acknowledged in a masculine gender representation of scientific knowledge and the stereotypes concerning the cognitive skills of women and men. So where does the leaky pipeline start? I'm giving here an example from British Columbia, and I believe it's similar across the country. The leaky pipeline starts in high school, where, for example, you're shown here is that physics grade 12 girls, their presence in a physics class is only 30%, and also the bachelor degree level in science, technology, and engineering presents a leak for women in science. Every year, over 56% of the full-time university students are women, and 54% of the full-time community college career students are women. And still, even with this, we see that only about 26% of the PhDs awarded in physical sciences, they go to women. And if we look, for instance, at what happens when we go to in the various steps of an academic career, if you follow the diamonds here, you will see how starting from a PhD percentage of women of about 25%, we decrease slowly going in the academic ranks, increasing in academic ranks. And these are data from 2005. By then, just above below 10% of women were in full professor positions. So, gender stereotypes operate often invisibly, affecting women's attitudes towards physics. And their perception and internalization appear to have a strong role in producing low self-esteem and dynamics of self-exclusion from scientific studies and high-level scientific careers. Having to deal with a long-lasting belief in the objectivity of science, programs are often engaged in Canada in what can be considered cultural battles aimed at dismantling the myth of gender-neutral science. And programs in this area tend to concentrate on activities such as awareness raising, education, training, and dissemination, as well as in action research that tries to find evidence for the claim of the male gender nature of science and provide a basis for concrete programs aimed at legitimizing women's approaches and points of view on scientific research and innovation. The belief in the gender blindness of science is, as mentioned, one of the strongest, yet most invisible barriers to women progressing in substantial numbers in science and technology sectors. Teaching contents and methodologies indeed directly affect the conceptions that new generations of students will form over their disciplines, and to strengthen the pipeline, that is to increase the number of girls and women in physics education, we need to several programs are carried out that review and question the traditional teaching methods and test new approaches such as the ones presented just before my talk and elaborate new curriculum and provide guidelines. The percentage of female doctoral students is about 30, was in 2008-2009 about 30% of the female enrolled in undergraduate course in mathematics and physics. And we are still far from an ideal situation where young female physicists are comfortable in identifying themselves as the next Galileo or Newton. And as you all know, Nobel Prizes and other scientific awards for discoveries are dominated by male physicists, and strong role models to inspire the next generation are not visible except for a few in the Canadian physics community. There's a couple of examples of women in the area of science and technology. So, a couple of final remarks. It is hard to differentiate the female influence in physics, but females are still underrepresented in the physics profession, and that is and will be a topic of concern in gender studies. There is no evidence that says that physics is more suited for the male brain than for the female brain. And in fact, as I showed you, at a young age, girls perform equally well in physics. Still, as we saw from the statistics, the percentage of researchers in mathematical and physical sciences in academic positions was only 17%. I will conclude with some food of thought. We are all gathered here today coming from different worlds. Each of us is based in and very much immersed in our own particular worldview, and very often that view remains hidden unless we are challenged. Nevertheless, acknowledgement of these important differences in worldview is a first step towards overcoming them and working together to devise and implement strategies that support and encourage women in physics. So, in conclusion, women may expect to continue to make gains. However, this will only happen if governments, institutions, and academic staff and associations press for greater equity in all areas of science. And at national levels, I'm confident that the overall climate for women in physics, both in academia and in industry, has improved significantly over the past decade. So I will give you some food of thought. A quote from a historian of science who said that the question is not why there have not been more women in science. The question is rather why we have not heard more about them. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Adriana. Questions? I shall come up and give you the amplification stick.
So there was this study that came out in the UK about a month ago, looking at the employability prospects of different undergraduate degrees in that country. And they found that people who graduated with a physics degree, their unemployment rate 6 months after graduation was actually 3% higher than the average graduate who graduated at the same time. And also that of the people who graduated with a undergraduate degree in physics, only 3% were actually working in a physics-related field. And the last time I heard about this, the numbers are fairly similar for Canada. The employment rate for people with physics degrees is actually higher than the average across all degrees. And so if there actually are all these increasing jobs available in physics outside of academia, why are we still unemployed?
Why are we still unemployed? Because we don't know how to find out about them. That's, I think, the major hurdle. It's when you are looking for a job, you have to have a network of connections as wide as possible, and you need to know people. If you are looking for a non-traditional job outside academia or not in industry through another job advertisement, it's important to have connections and to hear, like Melanie was giving last night, some examples. You may not even think that there are positions for physicists in certain departments of government or in the financial sectors or in the banks, but they are there. And all those who find jobs, I think they hear about the opportunities through connections, not through the usual job advertisements. I think only a few percent of the jobs are found through advertisements.
So is CAP doing anything about this?
CAP has a hard time keeping track of the graduates. First of all, because once they are not anymore CAP members, we have no way of keeping in touch with them. And also from privacy reasons, unless the person voluntarily tells their departments where they are, where they found a job, we are not allowed to try to find out these things. So we rely on departments to convey to the CAP this information about their graduates and where they are in the workforce. But the departments themselves may have a hard time finding out where the graduates are 1 year or 2 years after graduation, unless the person keeps in touch with their former colleagues. I can assure you that from other reasons, CAP is actually making an effort to try to track the graduates, because it's important for us to understand where our graduates end up. And right now we don't have a very clear picture.
I wonder if it might also be an idea if CAP could serve as a repository on their website for any jobs that do come up in industry.
They do this. But okay. Very few industrial companies are using CAP as a way of advertising job positions. Yeah.
Right. I was just wondering if you know of any universities where for graduate students, instead of TAing actual physics classes, if they can do also outreach to local schools as part of their TA teaching duties?
Well,
is that implemented at all?
One of my graduate students is involved in this Let's Talk Science program, but he's doing it in addition to his TA. I think you would have a hard time convincing the administration to give you credit for your outreach activities. Because even faculty members do all these outreach activities on a voluntary basis. I don't know if you realize this, but we are all volunteers.
Yeah, but just a comment on this. Yeah, I think it's a good point because if you have to do this on your free time or then have to do less research because you do this outreach, then maybe that's also a career problem for early physicists. If they need to, if they want to do this outreach, but then it's at, then it means that their research, they spend less time on their research. That's probably not a good thing. But my question was actually, so we know that there are these two body problems, and that a lot of other women physicists are together with men physicists. Are they actually the program similar to the one that you mentioned, for example, or extending tenure track for men who is women physicists and decide to take parental leave, for example? Maybe it would be good to have this also men helps for those men who don't fear in the stereotypes and actually take parental leave or share them with their wife.
I think you make a very good point because lately more and more men are taking advantage of the parental leave. And even if I know from my colleagues at the beginning when this parental leave was introduced to men, they thought about it as being a sabbatical, but they soon realized that they go home and they actually have to do some work. So now I think giving up their idealistic views, they actually help and enjoy the time they spend with their kids. As far as I know, all these arrangements are internal arrangements, so anybody who is in this situation, I would encourage them to discuss with their dean. Most people are afraid of talking to the administrators, but I've accomplished quite a bit for my colleagues, just having the courage to go and talk to them and explain the situation. It's important if you approach an administrator to be very well prepared, to have a strong case, and they will never refuse an appointment with you. But once you are there, you have to make the best of your time. And, I don't know how it is now at other universities. I just know that in our university, it was an agreement with the dean that allowed people to extend a year. And also, this agreement is now part of the faculty handbook. So universities that have this type of agreement, you would find out about it in the faculty handbook. And since you are at UBC, I believe UBC has all these programs taken care of. They are more advanced than other universities. No, really.
Are there any other questions for Adriana?
So I don't know about previous years, like at what age people would become faculty, but nowadays it seems that it takes at least something like average 7 years for students after their PhD to become a faculty member or get a tenure track position, and meanwhile they're postdocs. So, and that would be the time that somebody would, I mean, as a woman you would expect to have a child because you cannot wait until, you know, you become 40 years old and become faculty member and then. So I was wondering if there are this kind of support, not just by negotiating, just as laws or something like that for postdocs also.
The only thing I can think of is having a paid leave organized through NSERC. But I don't know of any other national programs. As I mentioned, there is at least one scholarship that helps women come back. And it's actually very important because it can give some funding. It's almost like a little startup grant to allow women to start a research. Because often if you have a long career break, it's almost like you have to prove yourself all over again that you are still the same person, you can do the same things. It's ridiculous, but that's the way it is.
Any other questions?
One more.
It's not really a question. I just wanted to know if those slides would be available somewhere, maybe on the website, or if you are willing to share them.
Oh, sure.
Oh, and we will have it afterward, or?
The slides will be on Pearsa anyway, so the talks are all recorded in the slides and the talk part. I guess if you want the PowerPoint version, you can send it to me, and anyone who wants it can get in touch with me.
Yeah, you can just email me, and I'll be happy to give them to you. It's not a secret. Thank you for your interest.
That's just the website for the link for all the talks that are recorded, and you can view them and view the slides.
And I encourage you, if you look up Adriana on Google, you'll find out she's published articles on these issues, as has Janice McKenna. So there are the woman whose name was, she was credited on a number of the slides. So there's some work already done. Then again, you know, the perspective changes slightly, but only slightly as we, you know, go through time.
Actually, so, Janice is at UBC. You can always talk to her. She's very nice.
So if there are no other questions, please join me in thanking Adriana.